Cyber threats evolve in real time, and in order for us to stay ahead, we need to constantly be sharpening our skills. Today, we'll be diving into some of the different ways to upskill, reskill, as well as bridge the cyber skills gap in order to safeguard our digital future. I'm Anita John, and welcome back to the In Cyber podcast. I'm joined by Callum and Warren. So in terms of upskilling and reskilling, this is something we are constantly doing. I mean, as young as we are, being in cyber, we're all studying as well. I'm sure we all have restless nights.
Definitely.
I mean, Warren, you're someone that's always posting on LinkedIn, always doing a new box, doing a new lab. So why is there a need to continuously grow, continuously upskill yourself in cybersecurity?
I mean, technology is always evolving, right? The way we used to develop code 20 years ago is not the same way as we did 30 years ago, 40. So that constant development needs to be matched with constant learning, so we stay up to date with the trends and the technologies. So it's very important because cybersecurity is built on top of the technology layer. Like, we protect digital assets, we protect software, so we need to understand the software and how to secure it. So that's why it's important to do labs, challenges, CTFs, because you're constantly learning through those types of things.
I mean, the most important thing is that, like, you saw a computer 50 years ago. It was the size of this room, but it can do about a quarter of the things that a computer this size can do, you know. And I think that with that comes the speed, the response time that you need to have in order to, you know, not have a hacker get into information that you really don't want them to have access to. And I think there's a lot to say when there's cloud, there's networks, there's physical security that you need to worry about that keeps on upgrading every single day, not every year. And I think you need to stay up to date. Even we see with, like, surveillance audits, as you would know, like, they constantly are changing their exactly what was going on, and their risk will increase or decrease depending on the situation.
Yeah, I was just about to add, of course, as technology also changes, these new risks that get introduced into the market, and how can you, to your point, how can you secure something without understanding it? How can you secure a system without understanding the risks? And, you know, with things like AI and all of these things, is obviously new risks introduced. And even though you already know the basics or foundations or even a certain level, there's always going to be something new that you have to learn. So it's a very exciting, I think, actually, the fact that it's not very stagnant. Like, there's always a need to upskill. Even the CEO is always learning something new. It's not just for interns, it's not just for people at lower positions. Everybody in cybersecurity has to constantly grow.
It's not a one size fits all.
Yeah.
Just because you have one certification and someone else doesn't mean you do the same thing.
Exactly.
You could just be using it to, you know, help your knowledge in a different direction. The people that we know with tons of certifications, but, you know, they may be only doing a small certain task, or, you know, it depends on what you want to know. You can, you know, you can have all these certs, but you don't have the credibility or the years of experience. To, you know, prove it. So you almost need to make sure that not only are you getting the certifications, you're getting the experience and, you know, experimenting. And I know, like, what you do, you're constantly doing, like, boxes and all that to make sure that you're enforcing the knowledge that you're learning.
I like that, the reinforcement. That's especially when you're learning how to pen test. You need to reinforce the concepts, because you can read them, but it doesn't mean practical experience. So it's very important to do weekly labs. Pen test is always finding any softwares that exist. So it's important to do labs that teach you those techniques that they are releasing weekly or finding weekly. So it becomes very important that your constant learning goes from monthly or quarterly to, like, weekly, because attackers are not slowing down.
Exactly.
They're moving fast.
Exactly.
On the defensive side, same thing. Constantly need to learn, constantly need to update what we're doing and how we're doing it. Because in the defensive side of things, threat actors don't use the same types of attack techniques.
Yes.
They constantly evolve. So you also need to match up the speed.
It's a very good point. I was going to say exactly that. Obviously, attackers are also upskilling themselves, because the more we have, you know, secure defenses in place, the more we upskill our defenses, of course, they're going to try out different ways as well to get in. So yes, we have to it's like a race, you know, and we have to constantly try to win that race. So definitely agree.
Can I just mention the way they actually upskill? They use the same type of material that we use in the ethical side of things.
Mm.
So there's this very popular certification called Certified Red Team Operator. And the course material is available on like hacking forums on the dark web and things like that.
Mm.
So they actually use the same things we use to learn how to do what they do. So
which makes sense because they have to understand, you know, how we what we're gonna use to protect the systems.
I mean, on like a very lower level in terms of understanding that, that's why you need to make sure that your Windows is up to date. Whenever if you're on Windows or Mac, if your Mac's up to date, your phone's up to date. So a lot of them are common vulnerabilities or exposures that have come out. But a lot of the people or a lot of people in the world don't see exactly what these exposures are. Just making sure that you constantly keep up to date with things. And there's an element there of trust and trusting the Windows or the people at Microsoft, as well as the people at Apple, you know, making sure that what they're doing is actually going to be helping you to stay more secure. There are a lot of conspiracies about, you know, the fact that Apple may not be slowing a phone down because but there are actually more vulnerabilities coming out.
Mm.
They're just trying to protect you more, and trying to protect you more actually causes the phone to slow down because that's just what it is. That's the amount that they're trying to put in place. So
that's a good point.
Yeah, very good point. So we mentioned the two words, upskill and reskill. Let's actually define that. What's the difference between upskilling and reskilling, to those that don't know?
So upskilling is going from a junior to an intermediate to a senior and getting the skills required to gain more knowledge or more skills in that kind of department. Whereas reskilling is, instead of staying in the same role, is, as you mentioned earlier, it's going from a pen tester to a working in GRC and now learning a different kind of skill so that you can make sure that you almost becoming a jack of all trades, but also just trying to expand so that you know more, getting different certifications, getting experience in the certifications.
That's the beauty of cybersecurity, because there's so many domains. It makes reskilling like a perfect thing for companies to do.
Yeah,
because you already have a security team. If you can get a pen tester to do an audit, they offer like a competitive advantage versus someone that's just done audits their whole life. So that's why reskilling is important in that sense. And like you said, with upskilling, personally, I am trying to do a certification, which is an intermediate level hacking certification. It's called the OSCP. And exactly that is taking me from a junior pen tester to like an intermediate pen tester. And then from there, there's so many other certs I still have to do to get to like an advanced expert level. So exactly that. It's those two things, upskilling and reskilling, definitely important, especially in our industry.
And when you were talking about the OSCP the other day, you were mentioning how it's like it's almost about luck in terms of what you find, because you can have all the skills and you can have the experience, but that's why you need to keep up to date, because there could be new things that are coming out that helps you do something quicker. So therefore, you find ACVE or something that you then recognize, and you can then get into that report on it. Whereas I think that, you know, a lot of people think that just because you have the cert and the experience, you guarantee to get it. You need to keep up to date. So I'm surprised you say it's intermediate. I thought it was very advanced.
It's the last step before advanced. So it's not basic at all. I wouldn't recommend someone who wants to become a PNT to go straight for that certification. It's like at least three good certs you can do before you get there. So it's not simple concepts, but let me explain it to you actually. So in the OSCP, they teach you enumeration, they teach you basic exploits when it comes to web applications and network, and the network, so like your Active Directory. And then in the advanced level, they teach you things like how to develop malware. So malware development, how to evade antiviruses. Mm-hmm. So think of it like this. In the intermediate, there's no tools fighting against you. But then when you get to the expert level, it's almost like in a normal organization, they have antivirus, they have firewalls, they have a SIM, they have alerting, they have all of these fancy tools. So we need to learn how to evade those things, and you only do that at the advanced level. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, you're sort of like going against something with no protection, basically, or like a low level of protection.
Mm. It's really cool. I was looking through some report that you sent me a while back, and it's MTTR, you know, the mean time to respond. It's very, very cool. You know, you start learning those kind of things. And before I read that report you sent me, I had no idea what mean time to respond is. And then it made sense when you're looking at, you know, how quickly do you respond to an incident or...
That's cool to emphasize, because we are all in cybersecurity, same company, but we kind of do different things.
Yeah.
So it emphasizes the whole difference in domains.
Like, yeah.
That's how fast
I was actually going to add on also, as consultants, like, we're constantly reskilling on a day to day. You know, we're not just doing one thing. We also have to understand how every other areas work in order, you know, because a client can come and want to audit, maybe they want to pen test, and you kind of just have to have all of these skills on hand, which is quite cool, because you become like, you know, a jack of all trades kind of thing. Yeah.
That's what they're looking for at the senior level.
Exactly.
Like, you are expected to contribute in every domain.
Yeah.
Add value.
Add value, Every meeting. If you're having a meeting with a marketing, finance, HR, you need to contribute. Mm. So exactly that. You always need to upskill.
Mm. And I think that's why in a remote company it's more, even more difficult to share knowledge. You know, like when you're in person and you're able to just have a chat over the water cooler about something that you know, some incident that you were involved in or whatever. It's interesting to learn about that stuff, but you don't really have the same effect when you're remote. But I think sharing knowledge is actually the best thing
definitely that you can do. I know it's something we are looking into doing, but we should definitely encourage, especially when you're working remotely, to that when Warren works on a pen test, then he shares it to everybody, or like, you know, feedbacks how it went, what he did, so that we all have at least some sort of understanding on how to do it, at least how to read the report, you know, because again, as consultants, we have to understand that. And you mentioned, you know, like all those fancy tools, that's also a form of upskilling, you know, like learning a new tool. Yeah, because again, in cybersecurity, there's a lot of tools that you'll be using. So that's also definitely a tool.
Every day is a new tool.
Every day is a new tool, exactly.
So you need to stay up to date.
Yeah.
Is there a point where the tools become too many, and there's too many tools, and you just need to go back to the basics?
Definitely. So you get like a standard set of tools that you always need, like your Nmap to do your network scan to see what IP addresses you see, what ports you see. So those standard ones remain, but then people, what they're doing is like they're rewriting those programs in different languages. Mm. So there's a tool called Rascan. It's written in Go. Yeah, it's written in Go, and it's faster, but it's kind of built on Nmap. So the output is actually still Nmap. So you get that kind of thing where they just improve the standard tools that you always need, but definitely they're always building new tools, and you can't use 10 different tools to do the same thing. You kind of have to like make up your own methodology and stick to it.
Cool. So then, I mean, moving on. So, and Callum, you actually kind of started this conversation in terms of how an organization can go about identifying the cyber skills gap and, you know, addressing that. So you mentioned sharing knowledge, which is it's a very good point, because again, that will then allow other people to also learn and reskill. Other than that, how else would you say an organization can go about first identifying the gap and then addressing it?
So, you know, the perfect tool for that is a gap analysis. You need to make sure that you're doing, you know, you're looking at your whole security posture. You're
gap analysis on skills specifically?
Yes. Specifically on skills to see where you're kind of lacking, if that makes sense. So when we talk about security and we talk about a gap analysis, that's more on the security posture of the whole organization. But when we're referring to, you know, skills, you need to make sure that if someone's going to conduct a pen test, they have the required skills. Because I think there was a case at some point where a pen test has to be done, but on paper versus actual experience that someone may have could differ. I'm not sure if that's something that you've experienced. That's the case, is that someone is amazing at what they're doing.
Exam to prove it.
Exactly. And I mean, like for me, I for the first 9 or 10 months of, you know, working at the company that I'm at, I didn't have on paper that I was an implementer of ISO 27001, but I had the skills to. So it's almost like you don't become credible until you get that, you know. But to go back to, in terms of how a company would, you know, find that that gap per se, I would say that they just need to find the service offerings that they do offer, see what exactly they have in terms of their employees and what skills their employees have and their certifications, and then where you see that you can either make more money out of the fact that you can offer a different service or dive deep into a service and get more of your employee skill in certain areas. That's where I would say is the most important part. But then, you know, going from, you know, the company to the personal kind of side of things, where do you kind of see, you know, you lack skills in? What are your interests? What are you interested in? If you feel that pen testing could actually be quite cool, go inside. If you feel that maybe too ahead of you, maybe do like a very basic cert, like a certified in cybersecurity. You know, like I don't have that certified in cybersecurity, so I'm thinking maybe I should just do it as a baseline. But how much, you know, experience makes up for the amount of, you know, if you need that kind of a cert at the end of the day.
So I just read this morning actually a comment from someone saying, as a beginner, you shouldn't just chase certifications. You shouldn't have more than 3 certs, he said, and I actually kind of agree with that, because certs doesn't mean experience, like you're saying. It's better to get the experience and then validate it with the certification. And you find that in security, most of the certs require you to have a certain amount of experience to actually say, okay, you're certified in that thing.
Because so you can just memorize some of these things and pass it.
But it's difficult to like think on the spot during an incident. You know?
So
exactly that. You don't, I would say they shouldn't just focus on the certifications. Focus on, chase the experience first, then back it up with the certification.
I mean, that kind of backs my story of how I got into cybersecurity. I was like, yes, I want to study a degree. That'd be great. But now you always see when you leave uni, you've now applying for a job. The job says you require 5 years of experience in coding or in programming or whatever it may be. So now I'm going, well, I need both. You know, I need what's on paper, and I need the experience. So how can I find that? And, you know, going, and as we said in episode 1, going through that, like all of our different processes, we kind of learned that you need to back up what you have on paper by, you know, the experience that you get. And in some cases, it's being lucky. Other cases, just putting yourself out there and getting that. So
kind of like, it's not, obviously it's not going to just come to you. I mean, even with all of us, we made a lot of mistakes when we first came in. It's just like math, you know, you don't just get it. You have to practice, make mistakes, fail, and that's how you learn. So same thing, and you raised a very good point in terms of like, how do you identify the cyber skills gap personally? And exactly that, the first step is know what you want. You know, you can't identify the gap if you don't know where the gap is coming from exactly. So yes, do the research about cybersecurity, explore the different domains, and try and practice also in the different domains, fail at it, and see which one you like failing in, basically, you know, and then upskilling that specific one. So yes, it's not easy. It's not something that's just gonna be like, oh, I like pen testing and I'm just a natural at it. I mean, Warren is really, really good at pen testing, but I mean, it's, you know, you're still learning, you're still like struggling in certain areas. So it's a definite like consistency. Practice consistently in order to bridge that gap.
I've seen a lot of things on social media of people going, cybersecurity is hard, and it's very scary for someone who isn't in cybersecurity to go, I don't think I'm gonna try that now because it's hard. But the realistic aspect of any job is it's hard, and it's gonna be hard.
Life
and
is hard in general.
Life is hard. I mean, come on, you know. So at the end of the day, yes, it's not easy, but you need to put in that work. You need to put in the effort. You need to go head down. This is what I want to achieve. But you can't just get there. You need to, you know, at the small steps. And I think that's where the certifications start. Is you start with the basic. You may think that you're way above it, but you know, you can't just jump, you know. You can't just say, well, I basically have the OCP, therefore I've got it. You need to, you know.
And you'd be surprised how many 18-year-olds have the OCP. because it's easy to study for 3 months. For certain people, it's easy. For certain people, it's not. So.
I saw on LinkedIn, there's like the 16-year-old hacker. Something else. And he's like super, super skilled.
Yeah, Italian, yeah.
But he can't obviously work right now. But like, you're so skilled. And exactly to your point, a 16-year-old can get the OECP. So, I mean, yeah. The
moment he's done at school, he's going to get offers left.
100%.
But the other thing to remember is that, I mean, I don't know who this 16-year-old is, but there's a possibility that, you know, you may not have the people skills. You may have a really good skill in some aspect, but you're unable to report on it. You're unable to communicate it. So you can get in somewhere, but, you know, do you have the other side? Mm. And I think that's what makes up, you know, Warren. You know, he has the people skills. Yeah. And I'm so sorry we're pointing to you a lot right now.
Thanks.
Just shows you the best.
That's
a very good point, because again, like a lot of people in the year cybersecurity, they just think about the technical aspect to it. But there's also that, again, I'm going to use you, Warren. When you're pen testing, it's not just you pen testing and, oh, okay, broke into your system. You have to take all of that and write a report that someone who doesn't understand this has to, you know, would be able to understand. So yes, you do need to have a bit of both so that you can explain it in layman's terms, like explaining to a 5-year-old or something, but at the same time also obviously do the job. So yes, that's also a skill gap, you know, that's also a cyber skill gap that I think a lot of people do lack in cybersecurity. It's just the translation from technical to business terms, you know.
And also something about this industry is like, when you enter as a junior, already you're reporting to senior management. There's no like, okay, you're a junior accountant, you report to the intermediate accountant, straight directly to the senior management, because most organizations don't have big cybersecurity teams. So you do need to have that people skills element, always improving your emotional intelligence, your communication skills,
presentation skills.
It's not something that you, and I always laugh at people come from high school and say, oh, I'm good at presenting, oh, I'm good at talking. It's like, you, no one's born with it.
Presenting orals and presenting a pen test report is
different things. So you always need to put in the work in that area.
Yeah.
And you don't realize, but how humble a lot of people in the industry are. It's a high number, but it's also, you don't see it because it's actually the people who are humble, the quiet ones. Guys who are just sitting behind there, they're getting the work done, the work's coming out in the day. They aren't the people on the call talking a lot. And I know I've been one to talk a lot recently.
Recently? Sorry.
But in that case, you've got to make sure that you're putting in the work, but you're not, you know, gloating about it. And I know there are people who naturally, they want to talk about themselves. They want to, and that's absolutely okay. But it's, you know, the more humble that you are, the more that you can get out of it, and the more that you support each other. I'm not going to mention the same quote again that I keep mentioning about the African proverb, but yeah, it's that.
It's your work speak for itself.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. We've been talking a lot about the different learning pathways that we can take. You've mentioned the 2-hour hack, the box, you know, those kind of labs. We've mentioned cybersecurity certifications as well. You also mentioned the degree, which is also another path. Obviously, there's no set way to getting into cybersecurity, right? And we can talk about, all the different kinds of ways. We can talk about, and we've already spoken about how we got into cybersecurity, which is all actually different. Similar, but
unconventional.
Exactly. The unconventional way. So let's unpack that. Let's start with, you know, the degree side of things. What would you guys think? And I'd actually like to hear your opinions. Do you think, is that the best way to get into cybersecurity? First get a degree, then get the job. Do you prefer the other route? What are your thoughts?
I think
on that?
As a, let's say I was a CISO and I was hiring talent for my team, I wouldn't say the barrier of entry is a degree, but I would want someone who's interested in pursuing a degree while working. I know it seems like a lot to ask for, but if you want it, there's nothing stopping you from getting it. So if people feel like, oh, no, I don't want to do certifications and a degree to get to work for you, that's fine. But I think you always get people that are willing to put in the effort. So I would want that, because a degree it helps that person get further in their career. You're not doing it for me as a hiring manager or someone as your boss. You're doing it for yourself, because in reality, you need a degree to climb the corporate ladder.
Yes.
I think, we can say you don't need it. Personally, from what I've seen, I think you need it.
Yeah.
So I would say you need
it. I think I agree with you. I think the bigger picture is you've got to understand what does that degree stand for. And it isn't the fact that you are you've got a BCom or you've got a BSc or you've got whatever it may be. It's that you've committed to something for a certain amount of time and you've achieved it and you've completed that. And a hiring manager sees that and goes, they've taken a three-year degree, they've done well, they may have failed on the way, but they've completed and they've got it. And I think that shows that that's the one aspect. I think specific in degrees, it doesn't really make a huge difference. Something that maybe if you're interested in computer science or if you're interested in maths, do what you want to do to learn. It allows you the opportunity to learn how to research, allows you the opportunity to learn how to interact with people. Exactly. And think critically. I think that's also very important to expand your knowledge in a school kind of environment versus in a workplace where there is not a lot of time for that. Mm. But also you make sure that the time that you're spending researching at work is minimal by using what you've learned at university.
Question, Callum, sorry. So on that note, would you say that same thing applies to someone that went to college?
What do you mean by college?
So like, let's say it's not a degree, but they have, I don't know, a higher certificate in a college or something. Would you say
going to CPUT and getting a...
Like Rosebank College Boston College, you know.
They also offer degrees, so it's the same thing.
I'd say it's
what if it's not a degree but more of like a certificate?
Like a course.
So
I think it's the same as a certification almost. You're given you are certified to do a certain thing, whatever that may be. The thing is, one, it's period of time as well.
Mm.
Like you got to make sure that the time that you're spending is, if you've done five courses and they're all 2 months, you manage the time and you know that you've done 4 2-month courses. He doesn't know that you're able to stay on a job for 6 months and deliver. I think the other thing is that it gives you a backing. So yes, you may be in a job right now that is funding you for what you're doing, but as soon as you lose that job, yes, you've got the experience, but now what like degrees or certifications do you have that now back up what you've done? Mm. And I think having a 3-year degree or 4-year degree or however long your degree may be, you've got that commitment that you've had. And that's why a lot of people who get hired at companies and are there for 4 months and then a different company for 4 months and then someone else for 4 months.
Yeah.
I'd also be a bit like, what happened?
Mm. I like your points of like what going through a degree teaches you besides just like what the course work is, like how to work with people, how to research, how to think critically. All of those things, I think we sort of get hints of it throughout high school. So I wouldn't say that you need to go to university to get those skills to be able to work in a corporate sense. No, I think you're able to work on those skills at the same time. So if you're learning it from school, you apply it at your workplace.
Mm.
And I think all of those things are overlooked when the conversation of do you need a degree to do the job gets brought up. No, you don't need a degree to get a job. No, you don't need a degree to stop an attack or respond to an attack. No, I'm not saying that, but there are a lot of advantages to getting a degree that will help you get further, not help your boss or whoever's hiring.
Exactly. I wish the way school was presented to us was different because they didn't really teach us how to go to school, basically, in a sense that, you know, all we knew was go to school, you have your subject, the next subject, exam, pass, that's all. Whereas only now when we're in the real world, we start to realize, oh, actually, this is why they taught. They never taught us the why behind everything they taught us, really. Even in varsity, like they just, like you say, they just teach you the coursework. In maths, they just teach you a new formula, how to do this. But they don't actually teach you why. They don't really say, this is actually to help you with your critical thinking. This is actually to help you with how you analyze things. It's just learning a formula and doing it. And that's where I think the system is a bit rigged, because then people just like become, when they go to school, a lot of students just like, they're just doing school based off memory, or they're doing it just because that's how the system is and it's a step in life that you have to take. But if you went with a different approach of, I'm actually training my brain, you know, reprogramming my brain to think and act a certain way, then it makes a big difference, you know, then you're not just like sliding through it just for the degree, yeah. but you're actually learning something and you can then use, you're learning a skill that you can then use in the real world. And I think, yeah, that's, if any lecturers watching out there, please change the system.
Well, I think that's what we kind of got to do as well. We got to try and convince the lecturers to understand where we're coming from. There's a lot of maths that you realize is actually is useful, but you only realize that at the end. In terms of the degree as well, also when you're in a job or when you're in a company, you're able to then sell yourself more to a client with that accreditation that you've got. So, for example, if you are now a company that's certified in ISO 27001, it's now more attractive to someone else that you know, or if you've got three guys with Azure fundamentals or whatever the certification is, there's a higher chance they're going to hire you because you've got people who are certified in that specific, you know. So, you know, and degrees kind of play a role in that. You know, if there's someone who's in law and they're in HR as well, it's actually a use for that person to be, you know, involved in a lot of things you do because they're adding value in different areas.
The competition out there is tough, especially in cybersecurity, you know, and to your point, there's a lot of people applying for that same job. So, of course, they're going to take the one person that shows the passion. On top of that, they have a degree. On top of that, they have certifications. On top of that, they have a portfolio compared to someone that just says, oh, hey, I want to be in cybersecurity, you know, so... It's the same thing like getting into varsity, you know. We all maybe did the same subject, but they're going to take the one with the 90% over the one with the 40%, you know, because it's life is a competition at the end of the day. So got to do your best, do all that you can to get what you want. So, and then in terms of other learning pathways, I know we spoke a lot about degrees. That's obviously not the only way to get into the industry. So there are other options. Like you can build a portfolio, maybe someone that doesn't have the means to go to university, you could still show your skills by building a portfolio. So how would you go about doing that? How can we, you know, tell people, or how can we advise people to go about doing that?
So if you want to venture into the painting side of things, I would say look at the popular platforms like TryAcme, Hack the Box. They have... pathways actually, like that will teach you all the relevant modules that you need to become a pen tester. And then there's a certification that you can take to validate what you learned. So that's one way. And then while you're doing that, you're doing these challenges, CTFs, labs, and you're documenting it, you're putting it on your LinkedIn. And if you so interested in it, you can start building your own tools, putting them on GitHub, opening source. Open source these tools and make an impact in the community. Like open source, like contribute
to open source
projects, you know, from a security perspective, and just shout it to the world what you're doing, what you're learning. I think that's the best way to sort of get started.
I saw someone who got a job from exactly that. He had uploaded an image of his GitHub. You know, on the bottom there it says, like the green or blue dark dots where you have
contributions.
Like for the entire 3 months, whatever it was, he had contributed every single day to something. And after posting that, the post went viral. And from that, he got a job. And it's that sort of thing, because you're dedicated and you're contributing to projects. You're doing something that's free with the skills that you've learned. Like I can go buy a book for 10, 15 rand and then learn how to program, and from that then create something that is then, you know, so, and you can probably do that on a 2 gigabyte RAM laptop.
And all of this is free, actually. You don't even need to spend 15 rand.
Exactly.
YouTube is AI.
Yeah.
Exactly. The skills are free these days.
Yeah.
Exactly. And both to both your points, with that is also you can, you know, leverage the community. So like you're saying, obviously contributing to open source projects. You can also just volunteer at some companies if you maybe want to sharpen other skills that's maybe not so technical, maybe something like implementation or auditing. You could try and see if you can maybe shadow, you know, at a company. Maybe not obviously do the work within reason, of course, but you can shadow. And if you really prove yourself, you can then potentially start assisting, but for free, so that you can, you know, enhance your skills. And then from there, if you really impress the company, you can then maybe get a job. So definitely there's a lot of, especially in cybersecurity, there's a lot of people that's willing to help. There's a lot of people that's willing to mentor other people. There's open source projects. There's all of these ways, all of these resources put in front of us to bring people into the industry. So no one can really say, oh, I can't get into cybersecurity because I don't know how, or there's no resources. It's like out there. It's really available.
Something that I've come across recently is I have friends who are trying to get in the industry. But these friends didn't do pure maths. Didn't really like pass their degrees. They don't have like a bachelor's in the matric. Most of them have diplomas. And when we look at UNISA's website in terms of maybe doing like a high certificate, you can't do it because you didn't do pure maths. So you actually can't do a diploma or degree in any tech-related program. So that's where these things that we're talking about comes in. Because now you can go in this hacker box. There is no barrier of entry. They don't care whether you did maths, little pure maths. They just want your time and dedication and focus. And if you put in the work, you will get results, definitely. You don't need a degree. I know I said I would preferably hire someone with a degree, but in reality, you don't need a degree. It's so many people in
South. It's preference. It's preference. It's not, it's like a nice to have. But not saying that, you know, it's just a nice to have, but it's something that will help you, put you a step further. So if you can, do it. If you can't, it's not a problem.
Yeah.
I don't have a degree or so.
I think we all don't have degrees.
Not yet.
Not yet, yeah. So, you know, it's
exactly.
That, yeah.
But we're still champions for degrees.
Yeah, exactly. And also there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of competitions in cybersecurity, you know, that can also, again, help you get into the industry. There's all of these hackathons, all of the, you know, CTF challenges, all of that also is, again, to your point, there's no barrier. They don't ask for, you need to have a degree to do this competition. Maybe you need to be a certain age or something. It's mainly for students. But yes, there is no sort of like hard requirements. You can, if you really want to do it, you just enter the competition and you get the opportunity to learn. You get the opportunity to network with a lot of people in the industry. I mean, we got in here from a competition. So there's that kinds of opportunities as well. And it's just a matter of putting yourself out there and taking it as it comes. So there are obviously different learning pathways. We've only mentioned a few. And again, just like all our other episodes, this is definitely a developing topic. There's a lot more that we can say. There's a lot more that we can, you know, give advice about. And if there's anything else that you'd like to know, pop a comment, pop a message, let us know. We are happy to answer any further questions. But we'll probably revisit this again in the future as the industry grows. Like we said in the intro, cyber threats evolve in real time. We'll probably come back and speak about more ways to get in the industry, more tools that was developed, etc., etc. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you in the next episode. Cheers.